This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, with Macca and Fiona Demetra on panel. Who's our next guest, Fee?
Macca, our next guest is author and playwright Van Badham. Welcome to the program, Van.
Hey, how are you?
We are really good. How are you? How's that knee?
Well,
how's that nose?
It turns out that I had a fracture in my knee. So thank you very much for the ice pack that was provided last time I tried to get into the Joy studio. Yes, I'm still nursing a bit of an injury, but there was no permanent damage to my face. And as my mother would say, break your legs, just don't break your teeth.
Yes.
Good advice.
So, you know, some of the help we provided there was some frozen blueberries.
Bag of frozen blueberries.
Bag of frozen.
Can I just say, Joy FM, it was very on brand. It was, I had such a tasteful recovery from my accident.
Great.
Now, Van, we've got so many different things to begin with today because, as always, you are, you know, kicking up a storm and writing some great commentary. One of the things that we wanted to talk to you about is an article. Now, it's coming out in The Guardian. I'm not sure if it's out yet about the recommendation.
Tomorrow.
Okay.
Yep.
Recommendations to reduce barriers to IVF for LGBTIQA plus people and single families. Can you tell us what's the good news about this and then perhaps talk about some of the other aspects of this news which you'd like to share and we'll be discussing in your piece tomorrow?
Well, I don't know if anyone remembers Greg Hunt, but he was a minister. He was health minister in the former coalition government. And he's been given a job as the National Fertility Commissioner. Words I never thought would be associated with Greg Hunt, but anything can literally happen. And he's been compiling a review of the National Fertility Strategy, a thing that I had personally not really given much thought to until I saw those words in the paper. The review that's come out, which was announced a couple of days ago, has some news in it, which is really positive, in that they've looked at the suite of laws that governs IVF, and IVF tends to be governed on a state-by-state basis, and there are more than 40 laws that apply to IVF in Australia. And it's things like around like the various procedures and processes. In the state of Victoria, it used to be the case that before you could go through an IVF program, you had to get a police check. So you'd be there, you know, about to participate in some really invasive and uncomfortable practices, but would have to have the police sign off that you're a good and decent person. That law has changed in Victoria, but it's sort of typical of the kind of regulations that have been around IVF. Obviously, there are restrictions on age, who can participate. And within those 40 laws or 40 plus laws that govern IVF in the different jurisdictions of Australia, there are a lot of contradictions, but there have been a lot of discriminations. So IVF has only been provided in some jurisdictions on the basis of infertility. Mm. And infertility would be determined by trying to have a baby effectively in an exclusively straight relationship for 12 months without a successful pregnancy, and then that would be considered a fertility problem which could be remedied by IVF. And of course, I mean, that's ridiculous. And we know that there's a huge pool of people who want to be parents who are LGBTQIA+, or they are single people who want to raise children in single families or non-traditional family units. So the really good thing about the review is they've gone, why do these barriers exist? These are inherently discriminatory. You shouldn't have to answer a question about, you know, like a 12-month straight relationship as a default position on what constitutes infertility and therefore a right to get IVF. IVF should be a right, should be a human right for all Australians, and the only requirement should be a desire to start a family and go through that process. And it's kind of insane. Like, I've been through IVF myself unsuccessfully, alas, and it's it's a hell of a thing. Like, and it shouldn't be more emotional or more judgy or more discriminatory than it, or then the adding all of that on top of the processes around it is, it's too much. Like, it is, I mean, they pump you full of hormones, but you're scraped and straddled, and I mean, it's not pleasant. So it's great that they've recommended a reform and saying, we're going to recognise IVF as a human right. We're going to take away these barriers. Love makes a family, and we accept that in Australia as a universal value. So that's the unambiguous good news. But there are one or two caveats around how we got to that place that I think we should be talking about more.
So with IVF in part, if and depending on the circumstance, is funded by the taxpayer. And, you know, if the tax, you know, if IVF provision, if there are rules around it, you know, depending on what the rules are, but I can accept there has to be, you know, parameters, that if everyone's money is used to fund a service to some extent, then everyone should have access to it, shouldn't they?
Well, this is the thing, and this is the argument that's been made. Like, How is it? I mean, obviously there are private IVF clinics, and one of the things that the review has established is that there shouldn't be financial penalties towards seeking a family. Like, you shouldn't have to go through various processes just because you want to start a family. And they're looking at that, like expanding that access and removing financial barriers. But the reason why they're doing this, and this is what my piece is about, is because they are concerned about the birth rate, and they're concerned that Australia's birth rate, reproductive rate, fertility rate has been in decline, and we are now having children later in life. So we've gone from having kids when we're 25 on average to having kids when we're around 31. And we're also, obviously, families are having fewer children than they were in 1960. And that's affecting projections, economic projections, about the size of markets and future economic planning. And Australia's not the only country that's in this situation. Like, infamously, there's been a huge decline in the birth rate in Japan, in South Korea. It's massive as well. But it's actually happening all over the world. And there are lots of different theories as to why this is happening. The accumulation of microplastics in men's genitals is one of the theories, which photos I will never be able to unsee, but also different social expectations and the fact that we lead different lives than we did in 1960, where women in particular weren't given many options beyond just having kids for something to do. And obviously we're partnering later in life because we're a society that recognises that, maybe, you know, with signing up to kids in a mortgage when you're a teenager yourself is maybe not completely fulfilling. And that obviously we prioritise our careers, many of us, and that takes time in order to achieve financial independence. And the fact that households usually have two partners who are working in order to meet household costs. Like, how could you possibly, unless, you know, you've been very, very, very lucky in the birth lottery, the idea of being able to afford a mortgage on your own, it's kind of extraordinary. So the freedom around IVF that they're promising actually exists in this context of patriarchal assumptions around how many kids we should be having. And there's a little bit of women blaming going on, which is a bit yuck.
That's true. I mean, I think for women who choose not to have children, there is still a great deal of stigma around that if you have that choice, for example. And then if you don't have that choice for whatever reason, and, you know, there is an people are going to be asking you that question, you know.
And it's like, very, you know, do you have any children? And you go, no, and they go, oh, okay. Like...
Ben, do we know, like, what proportion of Australian families use the public pay large amounts of money through public their private IVF clinics compared to those who access it through the public system?
Look, I don't have those figures in front of me. But, I mean, I obviously understand. And when you're in that place where you want to start a family, you do get the IVF madness where you will pay anything, do anything, say anything in order to get access to that, especially when they're pumping you full of hormones and it's all failing. And, I mean, this is... It's really interesting to see the way that the discussion is being handled by people who are not physically going to be birthing parents, I think is possibly the best way of describing it. Rather, a lot of suits and ties involved in this conversation about birth rates and fertility and what makes a family. That's completely removed from the physical reality of who actually goes through that process and who's capable of going through that process and what that's likely to be. But I get so frustrated because, like, it's it's an unambiguous good that discrimination is going to, the review recommends removing discrimination from IVF. That is awesome. I think everyone has the right to build a family, and I think that's really great. But the fact that we got to this place because there's been a bit of, well, you know what women are like and they're not having children early enough and our birth rate's dropping and it's their fault, is kind of the framework that a lot of these announcements are appearing in. And that's horrible. And, I mean, in Australia, like, that attitude persists. But in other countries, it's been even worse. There's a really interesting discourse going on in South Korea at the moment. There's even a, like, radical movement called the 4B movement of young South Korean women who commit to living lives without romantic relationships, without sexual relationships, absolutely being on their own, as a protest against the patriarchal nature South Korean society. And a lot of South Korean feminists who are like, why would we want to have children and bring children into this world when this country isn't doing anything about its gross misogyny and sexism problem? Like, it's quite reasonable for straight women to go, I'm not doing it. I'm not playing. And that's a really interesting phenomenon in terms of a lot of the discourses around this stuff, because women do get blamed for the fact that, you know, we'll have a declining market, we'll have a declining pool of local workers. I mean, there's one really easy solution to a declining birth rate that's been used throughout history, and it's called immigration. And immigration's actually really great, because immigration creates opportunity, it creates economic engine, it makes societies more interesting because it makes them more multicultural, you know. And one of the problems in Japan, of course, is they have very strict policies around immigration, who can live in Japan, who can become a Japanese citizen, what it means to be Japanese. And of course, their pool of workers is declining, and robots cannot do everything.
They can't.
Ben, we do have to put you on pause there for
just
a second.
Just for a moment. We will be back. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion. There's still lots more to talk about. You are on Saturday Magazine with Macca and Fiona. We're speaking with Van Badham. Stay with us.
Whatever you had planned this Thursday night, cancel it, because you want to be with us on Backstage Confidential.
That's right, Adam. From 7pm, we'll be inviting another fascinating guest to talk about life, music, art, and maybe even a cheeky live set.
Oh, we love live music here, Rach. Not only will we hear about their fascinating stories, but they'll take part in conversations about things that matter to all of us,
as we use our exclusive pass to get to the places we shouldn't be allowed to go.
This Thursday from 7pm on Backstage Confidential here on Joy.
What's your view? Let us know by sending us a text 0427-JOY949 or on Twitter at SatMagJoy949.
For all voices, this is Joy.
We want to hear your voice. This is Macca and Fiona on Saturday Magazine. We're speaking with Van Badham. Now, people want to SMS us. How do they do that, Fee?
0427-JOY949, which is 569949. Or you can email us on air at joy.org.au. We've got the marvellous Van Badham on the phone. And if anyone has anything they'd like to ask Van about her coming stories and pieces in the media, please do. Now, Van, we were talking, of course, about the increased access to IVF for rainbow communities and single families or single women. And also how the other thing is that women blaming is, of course, leading us into the next topic, which, of course, is J.D. Vance and forcing people.
Can you get IVF for a couch? Sorry.
They've gone in the absurd direction of forcing straight women to have babies. Ben, can you let us know a little bit more about this particular topic, and then maybe we can head into disinformation in the US election.
Well, this is one of the interesting sort of phenomena of trying to understand just where all of the woman hating is coming from in the new leadership of the Republican Party. And J.D. Vance and his repeated statements about childless cat ladies determined to make everybody miserable, and how the natural role for a grandparent is to assist in the rearing of children, and that he's made suggestions that people who don't have children shouldn't be allowed to vote. And all of this exists in this really gendered and gross terms where, you know, JD's idea of what men are those, you know, superior people who have the right of authority and the right of vocation and, you know, the right to dominate conversations, whereas those that, in his weird conception of gender, are women have these restrictive roles in the home based around child rearing and meaning only comes from having a family. I mean, he's made public statements that have said that women should stay in physically abusive relationships with men for the sake of the children. And I'm like, I don't think you could find a psychologist anywhere in the world who would suggest that that was good. Or maybe you could speak to some survivors of family violence who grew up in situations with you know, violent and abusive fathers against mothers, and ask them if they thought it was better that their parents stayed together. I think you'd get some real clarity on that issue, JD. But what I was thinking about, because I've written quite a lot about this sort of population anxiety and this idea that, you know, declining birth rates are this terrible, terrible problem. Because obviously as an environmentalist, you go, well, we want people to have, we want every child to be wanted and every parent to be willing. I mean, that's the bedrock value. Mm. But we also, you know, like exploding population, resource disparities, you know, these are things that we actually have to consider as well. Like, how many people can the planet, given the way that we live, actually handle? So what is the problem here?
Yeah,
and the capitalist logic that we should just build more markets by having more babies is maybe, a bit unsustainable. But I was thinking about this frame, like this anxiety, this patriarchal anxiety around declining birth rate. And it makes sense in the worst possible way, the kind of statements that J.D. Vance and those guys have been making in the United States. Because unlike in Australia, where we've gone, well, the birth rate's declining, we should expand the franchise of IVF so there can be more families, and families of all kinds of diversity can feel like this is an option for them, and we're going to reduce barriers to that. In America, the barriers are really important to the Republicans. Like, they absolutely don't want there to be queer families. They do not want that. Their view of what constitutes a family is so restricted and so aggressively heteronormative, and within that, also patriarchal, and also based in a belief that women are inherently subservient. Like, that's their confection of what womanhood means, that they don't really have a lot of places to go if they're trying to come up with solutions to declining birth rate. So all of this crazy stuff that J.D. Vance is coming out with about you should only be allowed to vote if you have children, and, you know, women should have this role in the home as child rearers, and this sort of ideological movement in the United States around trad wives and trad living and, you know, the greatest job you'll ever have is to be a mother. And I'm like, really? Because I'm a playwright. I think that's pretty fun, actually, you know. That kind of worldview, because they're trying to maintain the birth rate, they are the only sort of avenue they have to go down is this idea of trapping women in the home, trapping them in straight relationships, trapping them in like sort of constant childbearing. And this is part of the ideological suite of really objectionable values about restricting access to reproductive care, about terrifying women out of seeking abortions if they want them or need them. The suite of policies around, there are guys in the Republican Party who've come out against no-fault divorce. They essentially want to keep straight women pregnant and trapped in the home all the time. And this is an extraordinary thing to consider in 2024, because our parents and our grandparents, they fought big social struggles and big campaigns to go, life is more than just servitude and entrapment. Like, life is about, you know, the individual right to pursue destiny, and that applies to everybody. And the idea that, you know, if you have reduced all of these options, if you're so committed to your weird gendered heteronormative obsession that you think only a straight relationship should be enfranchised to have children, but also you really are obsessed with maintaining or improving the birth rate, you do start pursuing absolute wackadoo policies around restricting women's rights and reproductive access. It is terrifying.
Can I ask, Van, so J.D. Vance and Donald Trump are married to women. And if we assume that, you know, the election is 50-50, 50% of voters are going to choose to vote for Trump and Vance, and 50% thereabouts will choose to vote for Harris and Waltz. In that, in those 50%, half of those voters are women. So on the Republican side, this narrative that you've talked about, which basically is, you know, not a very clever updating of the barefoot and pregnant mantra, how do women, and I can't answer this because I'm a man, how do women rationalise voting for these sorts of candidates that espouse these sorts of policies? I don't get it.
Is it like a form of sacrifice?
Like, how does that work? I don't get it.
Well, I'll give you a couple of reasons. Like, one, the Trumpism is not just a political movement. In fact, it's difficult to articulate its politics because actual policy positions aren't consistent.
Yeah.
You know, it sort of varies all over the place, whatever Trump thinks up. But it's a cultural movement. There are really specific rituals and behaviours around Trumpism, attending Trump rallies, what you wear to a Trump rally, the kind of music that you listen to, you know, the stuff that you buy, like the Trumpy bears and the Trump coins and Trump Bitcoin. But there's a whole sort of participatory element around Trumpism that is recognisable to people. I think even here in Australia, we could all probably draw a fairly accurate cartoon of somebody at a Trump rally based on what the media images we've seen. And that's really powerful. Like, politics flows downstream from culture, and what Trumpism has done has created a movement that you don't have to know anything about politics to actually participate in. And that's very powerful to people. It's social. People socialise at Trump rallies. They go to market stalls. They buy merch. They have conversations about, you know, cultural reference points of familiarity. They love the same heroes and hate the same villains. And, of course, if that's your community, the idea of going, I'm going to make a rational decision about my own biological and social destiny within the context where everyone I know, the person I'm married to, you know, my parents, my cousins, they're all part of this particular cultural event, you know. And there are women, and I've struggled to understand why, but for whatever reason, the trad wives who don't even drink pasteurised milk, which just seems a bit self-harmy, but okay, you know, like, this is their lifestyle. And this is, you know, what they connect to. The way that they perform their gender is within that paradigm, okay? But the other thing which is really interesting, and I say this as somebody who studies far-right movements with my academic hat on, is that a lot of the most aggressive proponents of Trumpism and the women who are associated with the Trumpist movement don't actually think that the restrictions will apply to them. It's that infamous meme on the internet, "I never thought leopards would eat my face," says the woman who voted for Leopards Eating People's Faces Party.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of these people. Because the reality is, and we know this from countries like El Salvador, so El Salvador has the most restrictive anti-abortion policies in the world. In El Salvador, you can get imprisoned for having a miscarriage, and that happens. You know, the idea of pursuing abortions is so, like, it is about social stigma and shame and imprisonment and legal and judicial punishment. That's what happens to women in that country. Do women still have abortions in El Salvador? Of course they do. Rich women get in planes and they fly overseas to get them. There are always carve-outs for rich people. And the other thing that we know about Trumpism is that the image of the Trump photo is the image of the white blue collar worker who is from Detroit or, you know, former mining communities or former factory communities or former, you know, car towns, industry towns, someone from Ohio. And these are the victims of globalization. The old industrial jobs linked to the rest of the world with globalization. And these are the people who've been left behind. Except that's not actually who the Trump voter is. That's the image of what they are. The real Trump voter, the single largest demographic factor, is being a member of a homeowners association.
Yes.
So Trump voters are middle-class people, professional people, who live near poverty but don't actually participate in it themselves. And these are people with social capital and access who have every right in a country like America, or if you've got enough money, you can afford a jail sentence, like the former president of the United States and his continuing delayed punishments. They have every right, based on material evidence, to think that the restrictions won't apply to them. It's everybody else who will have to deal with this. So you get these women in their suits and, you know, with their powerful jobs and their influence and their money on the Trump Vance train, you know, the media advisors and the staffers and the logistics and events planners and all the people who are part of the physical campaign, just not actually thinking that any of this rhetoric will apply to them. It applies to another person. It applies to someone else. And that's how you get people like Carrie Lake, who's the Senate candidate for the Republicans, who's a Trumpist in Arizona, on her you know, relentless crusade against drag queen story hour, and all the local drag queens came out going, "We've had parties at your house. Like, what are you talking about?"
Yes. It's so, I just, you know, I watch it, Van, and I struggle with, you know, what you've explained, you know, how you've explained it is great. It's the same as, you know, when there was a group very early in Trump's rise, you know, Twinks for Trump. And I'm like, what is this? Like, what is
make
this?
Make the links.
Yeah.
Make the links, boys. Make the links.
Yeah. You know, so anyway, look, unfortunately, we are out of time. But, you know, it's been great speaking with you and hearing your perspective. I know that we're going to have you back again soon. So,
anytime.
Please have a good weekend. Stay away from frozen blueberries and hard surfaces. And thanks for giving up some of your Saturday for our listeners. We really appreciate it.
Oh, Macca and Fiona, you guys are champs. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a
thanks,
good one.
Man.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Macca and Fiona, Demetra on panel. Stay with us because you know what? There's more.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.